Welcome into the Youtini Baseball Show. We're a week through the 2024 season, and it already has had its fair share of excitement. I'm your host, Anthony, and we'll be with you here at the Youtini Baseball Show all season long, learning about America's pastime and asking the big questions about this great game. Today, we're answering the question, what goes into constructing a lineup and pitching rotation? We'll dive into that and more during today's show. And I know the two perfect guys to help me with that, of course, my brothers in baseball and co-hosts, Parker and Adam. Guys, how are we feeling today?
I'm feeling awesome. I'm 2 days removed from attending my first baseball game of the season. I'm going to be lucky enough to be going to the Red Sox versus Angels game on Friday. That will be the Angels season opener, which will also be the first time I've ever been to any team season opener. So that will be a lot of fun. Not doing too bad. Adam, how have you been in the last week?
I'm going pretty good, lads. I've watched every baseball game of the Rangers season. No other teams. El Bombi's hitting bombs. Corey Seager's getting on base. And Wyatt Langford's forearms are single-handedly taking him to the AL Rookie of the Year. So I am good to go.
It's been, the Rangers are a fun team. I'm really happy for you, Adam, because I'm watching them. And I definitely have some FOMO/jealousy going on. They're just so fun. I mean, how can you... The fact that they have so many guys on that team right now that are producing at the same time, I just hope they sustain it all season because it's so fun to watch.
I do feel bad, like not in pity. I don't want to make it feel like I'm pitying you or anything. But the White Sox have had to play the Braves already, whereas my Red Sox, we just got off of a 3-game sweep of the Athletics. So, I mean, we've had two very different experiences here at the beginning of our baseball season, man. So it goes up from here. You can't really play a team better than the Braves.
It sure does. Speaking of how things are going now, we'll get into that here in a moment because we have some predictions coming up. But before we do that, we're going to start the show like we do every week, and that is with the scouting report. So, Adam, go ahead and share with the people what this week's trivia question is for the scouting report.
All right, team. For today's scouting report, the question is, and it's a carryover from Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth held the home run in a single season record for a very long time. And what I need from you guys is who broke his record initially and the year that happened.
Anthony, you're going down on this one, dude.
I probably am. I'm going to be honest with you. I probably am. I'm just preparing everyone for that. That's a really solid question, Adam. And as it goes, we will always go ahead and circle back to the scouting report. And Parker and I will try to answer that question at the end of our show. But folks, we talked about talking about lineups and pitching rotations today. We'll certainly get to that. Before we do that, we've been having a fun time with our community in Discord, on X, sharing a lot of content as we released a lot of new baseball content since this show has been released. And we've been talking a lot about our 2024 season predictions. So what I wanted to do today is kind of run through those predictions, spend a couple minutes talking about that. What we did, folks, is we went ahead, Parker, Adam, and I, and put together our kind of award predictions and playoff predictions. So we included NL and AL MVP. We included NL and AL Cy Young. We included the Rookie of the Year Awards, the NL and AL Pennant, and, of course, the World Series winner. So we really kind of took some shots in the dark, I feel like, with these. So we're going to go through our list, and then we're going to hear from everyone and hear kind of what the boldest prediction is for folks and then what they think is what we think is the shoe winner most likely to happen. So, Parker, why don't you take it away and give us your list of 2024 season predictions?
Yeah, okay. So what I'm going to do is just I'm going to start with my boldest of the predictions, and my boldest of predictions is that Bryce Elder, in my opinion, is going to take away the 2024 NL Cy Young Award. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Bryce Elder and his body of work, but he is a 6'2", 220-pound right-hander pitching for the Atlanta Braves. And it doesn't really hurt a pitcher when they pitch behind a lineup that is that good. So just a quick look at Bryce Elder over the last couple years. He's been phenomenal. Last year, he put up a 3.81 ERA, and I think that just keeps trending in the right direction. He even threw a shutout in the year 2022, so I mean that's pretty crazy. You don't see that very often, but it's the strikeout numbers that I really think are going to go up this year. Last year, he did have 128 strikeouts. I think that basically doubles this season, and that he makes a very strong run at the NL Cy Young Award, the 116 ERA plus. Anybody who doesn't know, ERA plus is a stat where 100 is league average. I think he really comes into his own and maybe gets closer to a, 140, 150 number in that stat. So I think he'll be 50% better than most starting pitchers, than all starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. But again, just going through my picks, I just rattle them off real quick. I got Freddie Freeman as my NL MVP. I think he's the best hitter in baseball, period. I think that my rookie of the year being Jackson Merrill in the NL, I think we're going to see really good things out of him in the San Diego uniform. Phillies are winning the NL pennant, in my opinion. I know that might be a hot take, especially with Bryce Elder winning the Cy Young for the Braves, but I think the Phillies do a good job this year of overcoming their demons. Now, we've gotten to my shoe-in pick, and my shoe-in is Juan Soto. I think that anybody who's watched baseball over the last week, if you've watched any sort of highlight show, Quick Pitch, ESPN, anything like that, you have seen Juan Soto highlights. The guy's gunning people down at home plate. He's hitting home runs. He looks like he was born to be in a Yankees uniform, as much as that pains me to say. So I think Juan Soto is just an absolute runaway in his contract season with the AL MVP, and I think he signs a $600 million contract, $500 million contract, somewhere around those lines in the offseason. AL Cy Young, I got Logan Gilbert. AL Rookie of the Year, I got Jackson Holliday. The pennant in the American League, I got going to the Astros, which doesn't look that great considering I made this pick before the opening season or series.
I know the Astros have the track record, but I'm really not high on them. I think it's going to fall off a cliff eventually here, and I think we're getting close.
Yeah, after that first series, you saw a lot of the cracks in their armor, really. And the pick doesn't seem as strong as it once did. It almost felt like the phone it in chalk pick when I made it. But no, I think you might be onto something there, Anthony. But I stick with my picks, and meeting them in the World Series, of course, I already had the Phillies. I think the Phillies win that World Series, and specifically, I think they win it 4-2.
I just hope for that organization and that fan base that that actually happens. I mean, they talk about a team that like needs to win. That team needs to win one soon.
Yeah, I also just like have a personal connection, I think, to the Phillies. Bryce Harper, I loved him as soon as he came into the league, but also just their front office. Dave Dombrowski was the GM that won the World Series with the Red Sox last, and me and a lot of Red Sox fans really felt like he was done dirty when he was fired the next season, and he went into Philly and immediately has just done Dave Dombrowski things, and he spends money, and he performs, and his teams perform. So I hope for his sake and for those dedicated Philly fans' sake, I hope they do a good job.
Yeah, 100%. That's those really good picks, Parker. We'll be interested to see how those play out. It looks like we're... Most likely, the three of us are going to have some shared picks, which is no surprise there. But Adam, why don't you kind of go through your list and highlight some of your interesting picks?
I can do that. What I'm going to do first is just quickly go through the NL picks because my shoe-in and my bold prediction belong to the American League. So let's smash out the NL MVP is Mookie Betts. This is going to go one of two ways. He's going to go into shortstop and show why people consider him to be the best overall player in baseball, because he just masters yet another position and probably arguably the hardest position in my view. Or it might be a step too far and someone else is selected as MVP. Spencer Strider of the Braves, I think he's going to walk away with the Cy Young. You know, his ERA was a little high last year, but I think he's added a third pitch and he's going to ride that to the Cy Young. Rookie of the Year is the $300 million man, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I think he will move forward. And the pennant is the super team, the Dodgers. Now the American League. And this is my bold prediction. And my bold prediction is a bit of respect is put on Corey Seager's name, two-time World Series MVP. I think that if he remains healthy, there is a case for him to be the MVP. He was injured last year and came second. And I think there was an argument that maybe the Ohtani streak could have been broken by Seager if he could remain healthy. So that's my bold prediction.
Totally unbiased pick.
Anthony, I was just about to say, I appreciate how much of a Rangers homer Adam 100% is. And you know what? Like, respect to it. Because I wish that I was like picking Trevor Story to win the MVP, man. Like, I genuinely wish.
But in all seriousness, though, I mean, it's a solid pick. The guy's a stud. He's been getting better every year. So, I mean, bias aside, I mean, very well could be the case. Go ahead. Keep going. Sorry to interrupt you.
$50 million man himself.
There you go.
That's true, lads. And I would like to say the bias ends, but it does not. However, it is broken by my AL Cy Young pick, Corbin Burns. I think he's made the change, and I think he's going to ride that to the Cy Young. My rookie of the year is Mr. Forearms himself, Wyatt Langford. The dude just bangs. He banged in high school. He banged in college. He hits homers for the short amount of time he was in the minors, and it's only a matter of time before he starts getting bags in the American League. The pennant is the Rangers. I think the Rangers will take the West. I think they will take the pennant, but the hardest decision I made in this predictions was, will my team win the World Series? And my heart says yes, but my head says no. I think that the billion-dollar super team who wins the NL pennant, the Dodgers, walk away with the World Series. In 7 games, I want it to be close. They're my predictions.
I mean, those are great. I will say you're on to something with, as much as you would love to say that the Rangers are going to win a World Series, I mean, you got to remember how hard it is to win back-to-back World Series. I mean, it is extremely challenging. The last team to do it was, I believe it was the Yankees in the late 2000s. They won 3 in a row. It was 1998, 1999, 2000. I mean, Jesus, that's 23 years ago. That's insane.
Even,
it's hard
even then,
to do.
That third World Series, it took playing the Mets to do it. So, like, I mean, if you're going to play a team that you know is going to choke away a World Series, I'm playing with you guys. And I promise I love you guys because you're not the end of this.
True. I will. Yeah.
Ever so quickly, and, you know, I love your AL pennant pick, Parker. And as a Rangers fan, I wasn't going to bite, but I will bite. Astros can't go to the World Series without the permission of their dad, El Bombi Adolis Garcia. He needs to sign the permission slip before they can even move forward. And that's it. I'm out. I'm going to mute myself. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I will give you it. Up to this point, it appears that Adolis Garcia is the Astros' biological father. Like, it is what it is.
Oh man, good picks, boys. Good picks. I'm going to start with the National League MVP because that is my shoe-in for National League MVP. I went for NL MVP Mookie Betts, so I'm right there with you, Adam. Quite frankly, I mean, he is – you can just see it in spring training. You saw it. You see it here in the first week of the season here. The guy's lining it up. He's made – bat to ball has been through the roof. And here's what I'll say about Mookie Betts. First off, he's got sneaky power. He's always had sneaky power in his whole career, but it's really been showing in the last couple seasons. Here's the deal with, you know, these MVP voters who vote on this, that, you know, the writers, the Baseball Writers Association writers go ahead and vote on MVP selections and all these awards. I think there's going to be more value put on guys when we talk about valuable players or the most valuable player for a team. It's also going to be what can you do on the field? What can you do for your team in a pinch? Mookie Betts can now play shortstop, second base, center field, right field. Sure as heck believe he can play left field. I mean, A player like that produces at that level, that can play that many positions, there's not that many guys in the sport that can do that. I mean, he is going to be, at the end of the season, your most valuable player.
By the end of the year, you're going to be hearing that Mookie Betts is working on developing a sweeper and is looking at taking over the eighth inning for the – like, it's insane what he's been able to accomplish.
It is so impressive. So I think that's definitely the shoe-in on my list. Going down the rest of the NL, I have Spencer Strider of the Braves going ahead and winning the NL Cy Young. I have Jackson Churio of the Milwaukee Brewers winning the Rookie of the Year in the NL. He hit his first home run today, I believe, yesterday or today, but he hit his first home run. Really excited to see that kid and what he can do. For the NL pennant, I do have the Braves. They're just so damn good. There's no getting around it. I'm impressed by what they've done up to this point. I've seen it firsthand. It's not pretty. The AL side of the house, AL MVP, I'm with you, Parker. Juan Soto all day long. There's something to be said about also being in Yankee Stadium and having that short porch right, homers all day long. You can even add Fenway to that list too, quite frankly. I'm going to save my bold prediction. I'm going to pass that one here for a second. I'm going to go my AL Rookie of the Year. Have to definitely agree with Adam. Wyatt Langford, dude's a stud, already hitting it like crazy. Excited to see him this year. My AL pennant is Adams Rangers. I do think they're going to get far in the postseason. Mind you, they're going to get a reinforcement in the middle of the year of folks like DeGrom and Scherzer. I mean, basically, talk about getting those guys halfway through the season. Whew, that's a lift, assuming they stay healthy. Asterisk. But World Series winner, I'm going with the Braves. I got to go with the Braves. I just feel like they're one of those teams that have it all from a kind of a both sides of the ball, offense, defense, pitching, that they can sustain that over 162 and into October. So really excited about these predictions, and particularly with my bold prediction. Now, this is – there's definitely some bias in here because I'm overly excited about this. I think my AL Cy Young, my bold prediction is going to be it's the White Sox, Garrett Crochet. And you're all probably like, you're laughing.
Yeah, you have some explaining to do. Let's.
I definitely have some explaining to do, but hear me out. So he was not my initial pick coming into this season for AL Cy Young, quite frankly, because he didn't even look like up until a week before the season that he was even going to be in the rotation, let alone start for the White Sox on opening day. It's been a hell of a story. But Garrett Crochet, if you look at what he's done in the first two games with the White Sox this season, he has a 1.38 ERA. He's got 16 strikeouts over his first two starts, so 16 Ks over 13 innings pitched. I mean, you do see this guy pitch. He's giving you Randy Johnson. He's giving you Chris Sale. I mean, he's throwing a lot of things at you. And if he continues on this track the rest of the season, it's going to be something special.
If he maintains, and I don't know if it's possible, like
that's a big if.
Maintain the strikeout numbers that he currently is putting up, and if he hits 190-ish innings, I don't. Like, he's got the same argument as a Spencer Strider type.
100%. 100%. Whew, good picks. That was a good round robin there. We'll check in on that at the end of the year. I think it's worth spending some time on it later on.
I just want to sprinkle a few things on top of this real quick. Wyatt Langford, both of you have him picked as your AL Rookie of the Year. The dude has never had below 1,000 OPS at any level of baseball he's ever played. So definitely a great pick from both of you guys. He came out of the gate swinging. His first at-bat, he got an RBI, which is like the most foreshadowing thing you could ever see. And then his next at-bat, he beat out a grounder to get a single. Like, he's got both of them. He's got both speed. He can hit with power. He does all five tools pretty well. And the last thing I will say is that the Braves, your pick for the World Series, why is it that the Braves won the World Series, 2 years ago, and they feel due? Like, they're that good.
Yes. It is. Today, we're going to talk about in a little bit lineups, and I'm sure the Braves are going to come up because that's a lineup 1 through 9, nasty up and down. And there's not many teams in baseball that you can actually say that and feel comfortable with that statement.
Agree.
Whew. I want to get into lineups and pitching rotations here shortly. Before we do that, guys, I got to say, I've been loving how lively and engaged our community has been with the launch of all of our baseball content. So if you're listening and you're in our Discord, especially in our Discord, we appreciate you being in there, chatting it up with us. If you've been on X responding to our stuff, we love that. I did notice Chris, who is a regular in our Discord, he's always contributing. We appreciate that. He dropped a really cool stat the other day about the Astros. Ronald Blanco had that no-hitter this week, and he shared a tweet by Jason Stark. For those of you who don't know, Jason Stark is a baseball writer, Hall of Fame baseball writer with The Athletic. And Chris shared one of his tweets, and the tweet was a really cool stat that was essentially, since June 2022, the Astros have had 4 no-hitters, while all 29 teams had only 3 in that same time frame, which is just bananas to me. It's nuts. So, I mean, when you're getting into our Discord, folks, those are the sort of things we're talking about. We're continuing the conversation, throwing really cool stuff around, kind of bringing it outside of the show and having a lot more opportunities to engage. So, Parker, Adam, why don't you just tell our friends more about what's going on in Discord?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's definitely the best way to engage with the Utini community at large. You know, it's through Discord. You can stay connected with the Utini crew, all the different fellow fans of all the different fandoms that you follow, and have access to even more opportunities to connect with all of those people. Like, every day I'm checking that baseball Discord channel and just making sure that, you know, I'm in on the conversation. You feel like you're missing out almost if you spend too much time out of it. Because not only do we have the baseball channel, but It includes a bunch of different channels for everybody. We've got, of course, our Star Wars stuff that we've always had in the Discord channel, but we also have Avatar, movies, TV, books, basically everything you're into. There's probably a channel for it in the UTini Discord. And don't wait. Go to UTini.com. Reach out to a member of our team. Just however you got to do it, get access to our Discord. It's genuinely one of the most positive, uplifting, and engaged communities that I've been a part of.
100%.
Yeah, and for me, a huge part of our Discord, especially on the baseball side of things, is the baseball press box. So by joining Discord and following that baseball rabbit hole, you'll get access to that voice channel. And what's it for? Well, it's for breaking news. We're going to have an opportunity to jump in there, discuss the biggest stories of the baseball calendar. And there's an opportunity for you to chat with us and talk about it. And we were in there for opening day, and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun for me. It was a lot of fun for the lads, for the captain, and for those who joined us. So please join us in the press box. It's an audio experience. We'll discuss baseball in real time, and you, our fans, can contribute to the conversation.
Shout outs to Michael, who joined us in the press box on opening day. Michael, it's not a video podcast, but I am wearing an Angels hat right now. So shout outs to you and your Angels and your Rockies. Big love to you, my friend.
All right, boys. Let's dive into it. Our big topic today, we're talking lineup construction, rotation construction. What goes into it? What does a manager or a GM think about when they're trying to construct a lineup or construct a pitching rotation for a full 162 season? And, you know, it's funny because before we even dive into the details, I kind of want to set us up a little bit here, because it on the face of it, it just seems so, all right, throw nine guys out there, throw five guys out there. But there is, between, you know, sabermetrics, between matchups, between the certain skills and abilities of the players on the field, there is so much that goes into this, more than people, especially if you're new to the game, more than you probably think. And I know Adam's going to have a lot to say about that. You know, in the year he spent with the sport, he's probably still learning stuff about how lineups are shaped and formed. And quite frankly, Parker and I too, because we're going to talk about things that changed just in the last year when it comes to lineups and pitching rotations. But what I wanted to do was kind of set up the history behind lineups and pitching rotations, since that always kind of tends to be the first question. So, you know, when it comes to lineups or batting orders, you know, remember, baseball batting order is nine guys, one through nine. And when you look at kind of the history of batting orders, you can really go all the way back to a gentleman by the name of Alexander Cartwright. So he was a founding member of the New York Knickerbockers. Yeah, how about that for a name? In the 1840s. So the New York Knickerbockers, put the American League, National League, MLB aside, when we're talking 1840s, we're talking about teams of guys in Brooklyn and Manhattan and New York getting together, finding a field and playing the very first organized teams of baseball, which is pretty cool. So Alexander Cartwright is part of the New York Knickerbockers in the 1840s, is really credited with implementing the very first batting orders, because before that, it was guy steps up, guy hits the ball, he's out. Okay, who's next? You, Johnny in the back. Great, Johnny in the back. Come on down and hit. There was really no order. So that's kind of the history of the batting order side. Whereas pitching rotations, history is kind of fuzzy on pitching rotations, guys. I mean, it's quite loose, the history of how pitching rotations came to be. But what we do know is that various teams used pitching rotations between a large time span of like 1889 to 1930. But when pitching rotations were first used, it was more as a kind of a response to an injury not necessarily a response to an injury, but to avoid injury or to increase competitiveness on a shorter time frame over a shorter period of the season. But it wasn't really used regularly day to day until manager Joe McCarthy utilized it for his 1928 Chicago Cubs. So this goes back a while. We've seen this stuff, like anything in baseball. It's been with us for quite a while, pitching rotations and lineups.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing to add right there, when you talk about Joe McCarthy, and Joe McCarthy is one of the most prolific managers in the early days of baseball. When you talk about managers back then, you talk about guys like like John McGraw. You talk about Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy managed Babe Ruth, both with the Red Sox and with the Yankees. And part of the reason, now Babe Ruth and Joe McCarthy had a very tenuous relationship. It had a lot of ups and downs. And part of that was Babe Ruth's desire to basically decide when he pitched with the Red Sox. He was in a very stable pitching role. And when he went with the, when he was on the Yankees, he had a much more, I would like to pitch when I want to pitch randomly. I'll just decide I want to pitch today. And Joe McCarthy didn't take kindly to that. He was the manager. And like Anthony alluded to, he had a very, you know, he was into the whole pitching rotation idea. He wanted a system. He was one of the pioneers of that kind of thing. So it's interesting to see that the guy who ended up managing and disagreeing with who most people would probably still say to this day is the best player in baseball history, he ended up, I guess, kind of winning out in the long run, right? Like we all use, every single team uses a pitching rotation today.
Yes, absolutely. And Adam, I want to come to you because I want to come to you here in a moment to start our conversation about lineups, because I think we're going to start there first. But one thing I'll say is, you know, this is our first topic we're getting into on this show. And like I said, every episode we're going to talk about something different. This is not meant to be, we're going to have a question, try to get you an answer, but by no means is this meant to cover everything, right? I mean, if anything out of this conversation, we hope it piques your interest. You're like, wow, I really want to dig into that more. And it kind of motivates you to explore this topic. And really, we're just here to have an open conversation about it, talk about how it exists in the game, and maybe have some debates along the way. But Adam, I want to talk about lineups here. And I want to ask you, 1 through 9, right? You have a lineup 1 through 9. In your eyes, your best hitter on the team, based on what you know, where are they hitting in that lineup?
That's a really hard question. And it's a hard question because I've seen two separate teams. So for me, I would put the best hitter at number 2 because that's who I think the best hitter of the Texas Rangers sits in Corey Seager. But then I look at the Los Angeles Dodgers and I see their top 3 being Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Freddie Freeman. 3 players who at any given day could be argued the best hitter on that team. And for me, who wants to delve deeper into this is where I see management being really important for the baseball team and the creation of the lineup and the thought process behind it. So for me, to answer your question though, Anthony, is I would say number 2.
Interesting. It's funny that you bring up the Dodgers because that's like one of the things. Obviously, like we've all seen, this Dodgers lineup is insane. Like it's got so many options. I don't know that Dave Roberts can make a wrong decision on who his leadoff number 2 and number 3 hitters are. But when we look at managing a lineup and we look at constructing a lineup, one of the oldest, I'll say traditions, but strategies in baseball history is platooning. And what platooning is, for those who aren't aware, it is when you're facing up against a right-handed pitcher, a left-hander naturally will have... There's no such thing as having an advantage over the pitcher. Like, you're still going to fail 70% of the time. But a left-hander will probably, over 100 at-bats, get maybe 10% more hits against that right-handed pitcher. And that's just due to the nature of breaking balls typically breaking in toward the player, and so then basically having more of a chance to make contact with the baseball. So when you have a lineup like the Dodgers, where you have a left-hander and Freddie Freeman, who I already said earlier, I think is the best hitter in baseball, bar none. And then you have a left-hander in Shohei Ohtani, but then you have a right-hander in in Mookie Betts. Who's pitching against you that day? Because I think out of those players, you pick between Shohei and you pick between Mookie. Which one? Is it a right-hander? Okay, cool. So Shohei's leading off. Get that advantage first at-bat of the game. Is it a left-hander? Maybe you have Mookie lead off. Get that advantage first at-bat of the game. In a game like baseball, where literally taking strike one lowers your batting average by over 50 points, getting to the baseball first and getting on the board first, getting on base first, I think it has a big, big impact on just the mentality going into the rest of the game.
It does. And there's a part of this too that I find the most interesting, and it's the strategy behind when you're sitting there trying to map out or project what that game, what that 27 outs is going to look like, and you're looking at 1 through 9. I mean, for those of us who are maybe not familiar with the game, I kind of want to kind of set this context. You got to think about, in the lineup, you know, Adam and Parker, I 100% agree with them when they say that your best hitters really should be 2 to 3, and you can even expand that 1 through 4. We could talk about those nuances in a second, but you got to remember, if you're batting 1 or 2 in a lineup, based on 27 outs and how games generally run, most batters in a lineup on average get about 3 at-bats a game. But if you're batting 1 or 2, you're getting sometimes 4 or 5 at-bats in a game. And if those are your best hitters, you want them up at the plate more. So there is also just a how the game paces and how the game plays out. There's a strategic advantage to doing that. Now, Parker, the leadoff spot's interesting. And I want to kind of hone in on the leadoff spot for a second, because there has been a long history of your kind of scrappy, fast guys with a lot of speed that can just get on base at a high average, at a high clip. I don't know that that's 100% the case much anymore. Kyle Schwarber.
I was just going to say Kyle Schwarber, man, the most unconventional leadoff hitter in baseball.
So from your perspective, I mean, is that, do you see that as being the case? Like, do you still think there's an advantage? And then, Adam, I would love to hear what you think, too, the advantage, especially for your Rangers, of having someone with speed in that first spot, as we have seen over the decades.
Yeah, I agree. I look at my team's top two batters, and it remains the same all throughout the season, and if they're healthy. And it's Marcus Semien leads off for the Rangers because he has the ability to get bat on ball and get on base, and then has the speed to steal if required. And then how I see Corey fitting into that, and why I think they've put him at number two and why he's so good, is that if Marcus can get on bat and Corey Seager can do what he does and hit the ball to the crowd, then we walk away with a home run. And, you know, then for us, we've been putting Evan Carter at number three, who can get on base and run and steal. He's already leading steals in the American League so far this season. So I do. I see the leadoff hitter as someone who just needs to get on base and start teeing it up.
So
yeah, I mean, when you're in the 1 or the 2 spot, more than anything, you're looking for OBP, right? On base percentage. And Parker, this is a great segue to talking about how really spots 1 through 4 work in the order. There's this concept of setting the table. Could you kind of talk us through, when we get to 4, kind of what the heck setting the table means? What is the importance of that when we get to the 4th batter in the lineup?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you were in Little League, think back to who was the best player on the team. First of all, he was probably playing shortstop, and when he wasn't playing shortstop, he was probably pitching, right? Like, it's that guy, the guy who was like the coach's kid, yes. Something like that. Where did they hit in the lineup? Well, most of the time, if they weren't hitting 4th, that player being... if they weren't in the 4th spot in the lineup, they probably felt slighted or would complain or whatever, right? So there's this expectation that the best hitter in the lineup hits 4th, and that's because for years, and I'm talking, this is one of the oldest sports in the world, and for over 100 years, your number 4 hitter was your best hitter. And that's because, ideally, in a perfect world, everybody in front of them gets on base and then they hit a grand slam, right? That's the best case scenario for your lineup on a given day. These days, we realize that hits and getting on base are really most important thing, and they're also extremely hard to come by. So the most valuable hitter in your lineup, you've realized, okay, just needs to get more at-bats. That's why we started moving them into the 2-hole. Well, now if you're getting your best hitter, and I think this really goes into why the leadoff spot has evolved over the years, because if I ask you, Anthony, who, when you think of a leadoff hitter, who is the best leadoff hitter in the history of baseball?
Ooh, that's a really hard question. When I think of the best leadoff hitters that we've seen throughout the years, you're going to laugh at this. I'm going back to when I was a Cubs fan many years ago, and I think of Juan Pierre. Do you remember Juan Pierre?
I love Juan Pierre. And he fits right into the archetype that I'm trying to get at. Because when I think of the best leadoff hitter of all time, I think Rickey Henderson. You think of that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He gets on base. He can steal bases. He's fast. Well, high on base percentage has become the name of the game recently, because when we move that best hitter in the lineup into the 2-hole, you're getting them more at-bats, but you also want somebody to, like you said, set the table for that player. You want somebody in the... Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're on first. When the number 2 hitter in the lineup hits a home run, that guy on first still scores. I don't care if he's on first, second, or third. I just need him on base. So that's kind of where the game has evolved toward, just get your best players at bat as many times as you possibly can. When we talk about baseball, we talk about how there are 9 players in the order. You cannot carry a team by yourself. You cannot will them to victory by yourself. It has to be a team victory. Putting your best players, your best hitters on base, guy number one, best hitter number two, is the closest baseball I think we'll ever get to trying to make one person have the agency to truly affect the game more than any other given person.
100%. And that has evolved into that four hitter is not holistically oftentimes the best player in the whole lineup. In fact, more often than not, when you're looking at 1-4, 1-5, they're the folks that they're the players with the power, right? I mean, we're talking about guys that maybe have more power and have sacrificed the on-base percentage or have sacrificed the average. But there are exceptions to this 1-4, 1-5, right? And we talked about earlier, Parker and I got excited about Kyle Schwarber. Well, if anyone who's seen Moneyball, I know the three of us love Moneyball. Highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. But one of the most famous lines in that movie is, well, why do we love him? Because he gets on base. Like, if he gets on base. And Kyle Schwarber often, I mean, now he's doing it frequently. He's in leadoff for the Phillies probably every day at this point. And he doesn't hit for average. He hovers around 200, not great, but below the Mendoza line. But what is he doing? He's either hitting homers or getting walks and therefore getting on base. So it has evolved from what it has been. Adam, I want to ask you, you know, as someone who's representing someone who is more new to the sport, when you look at lineups, particularly even kind of the back end of lineups now, to when you're looking at spots, you know, 5-9, what are some of your observations for how you've seen teams build out lineups, even on the back half of things?
Yeah, you know, I look at 4 and 5 as you guys talked about, and I love the analogy of setting the table. You know, only this morning I was looking at stats for the Rangers and RBI leaders, and our RBI leaders are Adolis Garcia and Josh Young, who hit between 3 and 5. And it looks like Corey and Marcus set the table, and then Adolis comes in and cleans it up. And whenever he walks up and there is bases loaded, I stop what I'm doing because there's always a chance that a grand slam comes because of how the batting lineup has been constructed. We're giving him the best chance to use the tools that he has. And when I look at the end of the lineup, it's either for me, it's, you know, is it a bit of a cleanup? Is it just someone who can get on base for when the lineup starts again? So can the later hitters be ready to go for when our top guys are back on the plate to get them in for those RBIs?
That's absolutely the case. I tend to observe the same thing. And I can tell you, the whole on-base percentage, we like him because he get on base. It is something when you look at how lineups are being built and what kind of scouts and managers and people of the game are putting emphasis on, on-base percentage is 1-9 now. It just is what it is, because that's how you win ball games. So I want to transition to talk about pitching rotations, because that's something in and of itself. You know, pitching rotations are 1-5 traditionally. So we've seen many variations of pitching rotations over the years, but the standard is 1-5, where you do have your number one being your ace. And I don't know about you, Parker. The best way I tend to think about it is a pitching rotation really more often than not tends to be who are your top five pitchers in order, right? From the first being number one, and maybe the workhorse or the guy who is not going to give you a ton of strikeouts, that's five, but it's going to give you some innings. I mean, how have you looked at rotations over the last few years, Parker?
Over the last few years, just to keep it brief, I think that they've gotten a lot more interesting. And by that, I mean, in the last few years, we got the extra roster slot. So the rosters went from 25 to 26 active players at any given time. And it's been so cool to see. First of all, every single team used it on a pitcher. Like that is pretty ubiquitous. Every single one is either carrying another bullpen arm or even carrying another slot starter or a swingman.
Yes.
Swingman meaning somebody who can do both. And I think one of the best things and most interesting things that has come of that, it's kind of combined in the way that people are using the opener, which is kind of a reliever that pitches the first inning or two, or even just going to a full-on six-man starting rotation, which I think is kind of the future of baseball. I think that it's probably something that just preserves the arm of all of the other starters in the rotation. I mean, in Japan, we've seen it forever. They have a history of just having healthier pitchers than we do, and they pitch once a week. They have six games a week. Mondays are off every single week, and every single pitcher pitches one day, or starting pitcher has one day a week that they pitch. Like, your Monday or your Tuesday starter is your best starter kind of guy. So I think that that's closer to what baseball is moving to, especially as the schedules get a little more predictable. You'll probably have a Thursday off here or there. If you don't, you'll have Monday off here or there. So I think that's kind of where we're moving.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that does develop. I do changes in the air when it comes to pitching rotations. I think there's something to be said about in this sport now more than ever. I think people are craving, especially given the prevalence of the opener, to go back to traditional five-man rotations, because there's something to be said about, and I feel like in our heart of hearts, we all probably feel this, there's something to be said about a pitcher's duel where you have one pitcher or two pitchers going deep into a game, six, seven, eight innings, and just, you know, having a hell of a performance on the mound. So I would like to see that maintain that five-man rotation. You know, aces are a big part of this, right? Like, I don't want to put to the side pitchers two through five in the rotation, but any competitive team right now, if you were to go and say any team that's actually competing for the postseason, they're going to go ahead and they're going to say, this is my ace, this is my number one. So we're not going to spend too much time on rotations, because quite frankly, and I think we all agree on this, there's not much nuance when it comes to one to five other than the ace. But where it does matter, Adam, and you've seen this because your Rangers have been in the postseason quite a lot. When it comes to the rotation, you're going to go through five guys in rotation for 162 games. Where that does matter is in the postseason.
You are right, Anthony. We've been there a few times, and we had a lot of postseason games last year, but we won't tally on that. But for me, just quickly, when I think about the pitching rotation from a new fan, I see the number one starter, the ace, as the superstar of the team, along with the top players in the lineup. He is the man getting the bank. He is the $30 to $40 million man. And I've slowly started to understood the 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, you look at Jordan Montgomery and his off-season trajectory, you know, people saw him as a number two starter. And it was good for me to actually understand what that means. And you're right, it's all about the postseason at the end of the day. And luckily for my Rangers, the first three pitches of our starting rotation were set, and we were able to carry on until an injury hit our number three and Mad Max Scherzer. But I do agree with you that the nuances of the starting rotation pitching wise are a lot easier to grasp and understand, for me anyway, than how the lineup works, because the lineup is what can change tactically for me, where the starting pitchers, it's a bit easier to understand.
I love the concept of the playoff rotation too, because you hear about it a lot if you follow baseball. And what happens a lot of the time is that a team will go to a three kind of 0.5 man starting rotation, and that's because in the playoffs you get a lot more off days. You get an off day every 3 days, basically, so you're able to really use your pitchers to get through a playoff series. Maybe you get a week off between playoff series. You'll at least have a travel day. You know, you get more time off in the postseason, which you should. I think you should. You've earned it. You've gotten to the postseason. And it also gives the opportunity for fans to just see a higher, more polished brand of baseball, because you've got those absolute slingers going in there every single day. And you typically bring your 1, 2, and 3 starting pitchers as your postseason rotation, and you'll probably bring one more just to be absolutely safe.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, guys, I almost here soon want to have a separate conversation when it comes to pitching in general. There are so many avenues we can go to talk about pitching, and I want to give it its love and attention. So folks, I think coming up here soon, we're probably going to dive into pitching a little more. We spent a lot of time on lineups, rightfully so, because that's just a great conversation to be had. But the pitching, especially in the postseason, also warrants some further discussion. Really good, guys. Appreciate you walking through that with me and getting people hooked on learning more about betting orders and pitching rotations. It is now time for our favorite part of the show. And of course, that's Wild Pitch,
oh, yeah,
where we are pitching players to Adam, and Adam has to select between a player that I'm pitching and a player that Parker's pitching, and who's going to give the better pitch? Well, we'll find out. Now, Adam, why don't you go tell us what we're pitching to you today?
I'd love to. It is a current player who can give me a guaranteed 30 home runs and 30 stolen bases in a season. And starting off today, I think it should be Parker. It's Parker's turn.
Okay, cool. First of all, shout outs to Eric. Everybody knows and loves Eric with Utini because he's our like our arbiter of this segment, independent of the show entirely, because we don't want to tell Adam who we're planning on pitching, but we also want somebody to come in and make sure we're not pitching the same person. So thank you, Eric, for helping us avoid that. Now, just to get into it, guaranteed 30-30 season for me, there is absolutely nobody that came to mind before this player. I am a big fan of baseball families. And this player definitely comes from a baseball family. His father was a big league ball player. And entering his third season, his age 24 season, this is the easiest pitch in the world because it's so short. His first hit in the MLB, go-ahead RBI double in the bottom of the eighth inning to give his team the lead. I can still hear the call in my head every single day. And just in case you were wondering if this guy's going to be consistent, well, his team certainly thinks he is, because over the last offseason, he was signed through the 2037 season, and that's if all options come to fruition. There's a couple player options and a couple team options. But basically, to make this as simple and easy as possible, last season, 30-30, how about 30-50? Because this player was one stolen base away from a 30-50 season last year. 30 home runs, 49 stolen bases in the year 2023. And I don't know that there's much else that needs to be said. He's proven he can do it. He's proven that he's willing to stay and stick around and be faithful to his team in the long term. And I don't know. I honestly, Anthony, I think you got your work cut out for you in this one, because other than the guy we took off the table last week, we took Ronald Acuna Jr. off the table. I don't know if anybody else is as much of a shoo-in as mine.
Ooh, well, you know what? You may be right, Parker. You may be right. But let me tell you something. Let me drop some knowledge on you. And that's that, you know, I know who your guy is, and I love your guy. I think he's a class act. He's super fast, speedy. He makes fast people look not fast. But I'm if you get that reference, I like you even more. But I kind of question his power, but let me tell you about my guy. And Adam, you know, it looks like you're looking for a guaranteed 30-30 player, and I want to focus on the guaranteed part of what you said, because or what your request is, because you see, in order for anything to be truly guaranteed, all the conditions need to be right. You can't bake a cake on a whim. You need all the right ingredients. My guy has the right ingredients. Okay, in fact, he was a 30-30 guy last season, hitting 32 homers and stealing 37 bases. But if we're after which guy is a true guarantee, you want to dive deeper into the advanced metrics that are indicative of performance. Offensively, this guy hits the ball with an average exit velocity off the bat of 92.7 miles per hour, which is in the 95th percentile. So what that means, folks, in other words, is that he's better than 95% of all other players in MLB. His barrel percentage, his ability to actually hit the ball off a sweet spot of a bat and make solid contact, is 11.9%. That's 77th percentile. And his hard hit percentage is 52%, more than half of his at-bats, okay? So that's also, mind you, in the 95th percentile. When he hits the ball, it's hit hard more often than not, and it's hit pretty far more often than not. And that's not even talking about his running speed, his sprint speed, okay? Crucial for stealing bases, obviously. His sprint speed is 29.6 miles per hour. And surprise, surprise, 96th percentile on that bad boy as well. When it comes to offense and base running and all the underlying statistics, this guy is elite and he has the ingredients. 2024 is his age 23 season, okay? A young whippersnapper in current baseball terms, all right? He's already had a 30-30 season. He won Rookie of the Year in his debut season in 2022. He already has two All-Star selections, two Silver Sluggers to his name. That's a lot of hardware for a guy who can't even rent a car, okay? That's a big deal. He's been productive already in his young career, and the underlying advanced metrics say there are no signs of slowing down. He's the dude.
Wow. You know, I asked you both to maintain the momentum and keep the pitches of a high quality, and you did. And I'm going to start with you first, Anthony. And I loved your pitch. I loved that there were a lot of numbers. You're throwing a lot of numbers at me.
Yeah, on that real quick, hold on. Barrel. The advanced metrics, don't you cite the dark magic to me, which I was there when it was written.
I know you'd like that, Parker. I had to pull out the deep cuts on that one.
And let's not forget that, Anthony, you're coming in as the reigning and defending well pitch champion, if that becomes a thing as well. And thank you for your pitch. Thank you for your data-led pitch, Parker. Yes. You're coming in from a loss. You went first. It's tough to go first after a loss. You're wearing an Angels hat. You clearly have hope for the future. And
AL West leading Angels. Thank you.
And something here we go. No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to take the bait. But you said the term family. And like Dominic Torito, family defines us, Parker, by blood or by bond. Family is a powerful thing. And though, Anthony, I appreciate your numbers, it was just a little bit too much, man. Too much data for me. Not enough family, love, Parker. Today, the second wild pitch, you are the winner.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I really think we need a ring that we can put on for every week that we win this, if only it was a video podcast. But no, so my player, the 3049 player from last season, is none other than the Kansas City Royals' own Bobby Witt Jr. He is poised for an absolutely incredible season. You would not be crazy if you picked Bobby Witt to be your MVP of the American League this season. So good job, Anthony. Good try. But Bobby Witt.
Yeah, no, it was certainly a valiant effort, if I do say so myself. Next time I'll bring more of the feels. I'm sorry, Adam. But I'll tell you what, I couldn't agree more. Bobby Witt Jr., I'm excited to see him play, even though he's going to kick the Sox butt all season long, the White Sox. But he is absolutely electric, MVP potential. My guy also has some MVP potential, and that's center fielder for the Seattle Mariners, Julio Rodriguez. So really, really two good ball players there. That was an excellent wild pitch. Well done. We got to end on the scouting report. So, Adam, why don't you go ahead, give us the trivia question again. I've thought a lot about this. I'm going back and forth a little bit here. I think Parker has it, so I'm probably going to have him give the answer first. But go ahead.
The question is, who beat the home run in a single season record held by Babe Ruth, and what year did he do it?
Now, Babe Ruth held that record for quite a long time. He held the record for quite a long time. He set it in 1927 for those Murderers Row Yankees. It was 60 home runs. And this question kind of has the answer hidden within it, because Roger Maris broke Babe Ruth's home run record of 60 home runs. He hit 61 home runs in the year 1961, as depicted in the phenomenal movie 61, starring Billy Crystal, directed by Billy Crystal.
That's excellent, Parker. I will be completely honest. I had Roger Maris, and I blanked on the year. So he got me there. But that's it. I think that's got to be it, right, Adam?
I think we may need to double check where I get my information from, because I was running with a Hank Aaron in 1974.
Hank?
Oh, okay. So that probably, wait, no, 1974 wouldn't have been.
When did he break? When did he break the 715 mark?
Or the 715 mark? Okay. Hank Aaron, I believe that was. I don't think it was. It was 74. So you were looking at the career home runs, not the.
I would not have gotten that. I would have gotten Hank Aaron. I would not have gotten the year.
I would not have gotten the year either. But I'll tell you what, 2 for 1, because we just dropped additional knowledge. I'll take that. That's great.
Absolutely.
And I'm gonna play that rookie card, and I'm gonna play that rookie card again for you, Captain, because I did forget before to drop next week's wild pitch. Would you like me to do that now?
Please.
We have been talking about batters, and I want to talk about pitchers, lads, and I'm going to take it from the starting rotation, and it's going to be an active player again. Let's keep the modern times rolling a little bit longer. I want you to pitch to me who would be my number 3 starting pitcher in the rotation.
Interesting.
That is thought-provoking.
Number 3. I have my answer. I'm not going to lie. I have my guy. But to give me the number 3, that's such a good question, because everybody wants to know who your number 1 is. And everybody, I mean, we just gave our Cy Young pick, so it's probably one of those guys, right? But the number 3, and I'm okay, so can we set the ground rule that it has to be like a guy who's not the number 1 on their team? You can't just be like, oh yeah, my starting number 1 is friggin' Yoshohei Ohtani, and my number 2 is...
Yeah, it can't be a verified ace, and we all know who the aces are. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, my franchise, lads, you know, I'm running it like the A's, no money. Just be mindful, I can't give an ace money to be my number 3. So you got to pick a current number 3 for me, please.
Okay.
Fantastic. I love that. Looking forward to that next week. That'll be a fun one. And that'll do it for this week's episode of the Utini, a baseball show. If you are already a member of the United on Patreon, we greatly appreciate you. A special thank you to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Buzinski on our High Council, and James T., Ashley Inglis, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo at our Captain tier for their amazing support. Don't forget, you can interact with our baseball team on X. You can follow myself at ShuloMLB, Parker at ParkerKirk_, and Adam at DarkStarAU. And of course, don't forget to follow the show at Utini Baseball. As we mentioned earlier, we're always talking baseball on our Discord, having great conversations there, so be sure to join the conversation in our baseball channel. A huge shout out to our behind-the-scenes team. We have Kyle, who is our amazing editor, for making us sound good each and every week, my fellow hosts for all their efforts in bringing you some engaging baseball content, and to Wes for supporting our Utini Podcast Network. Support for this show and all Utini Network podcasts comes from the United Patreon community. At the heart of the Utiniverse, the United is where our most passionate fans gather for a deep exploration of all the worlds of Star Wars, Avatar, nerd culture, gaming, baseball, tons of other sports, all the fandoms that we love. We'll catch you next week here on the Utini Baseball Show.